I read this study this morning. Yeah, I know a lot of you just rolled your eyes. I like reading studies. I think they're great fodder for conversation. And a lot of them actually do have detailed meaning in there. This particular one, the report released today called Ontario's Equity and Inclusive Education Strategy. Now, this Diversity, Equity, and Bullying in Schools report put out by the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada takes a look at this because the rules changed in Ontario a few years ago on these areas. The rules changed, but did anything change with the rules? Peter John Mitchell is a researcher and author with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. He's been with us before. He sifted through all this. Either that or he just downloaded an app that sifted through rhetoric. Wouldn't it be nice to have one of those? Just give me an app that sorts through all the nonsense and leave me with the meat on the bone. Don't think that's going to happen. You still got to do your legwork. Peter, there's a difference between saying we're doing this and doing this, isn't there?
I think there is, yeah. Yeah, and the Ontario Equity and Inclusive Education Strategy has been, as you say, it's been a couple of years since it was announced and would be rolled out, and we're actually in the final year of rolling it out. But it's always difficult when we use legislation or use policy to try to manage essentially relationships in the schools as well. But it's always going to be a challenge, and there's going to be things that are going to be successful and things that probably aren't going to be so successful, and in this case might actually harm true diversity.
If you said no more bullying, and nobody would think it's going to work tomorrow. I mean, there were bullies in the schoolyards when I was there in the 60s. There's bullies today. There's cyber bullies today. They have more tools today, but they're still bullies. How do you say no more bullying and then enact it?
Yeah, I think it's going to be difficult. We've already, back in 2005, put in a significant amount of money into anti-bullying bullying, and I'm not sure that we're any further ahead on that. So certainly it's a hot topic right now, understandably so, and certainly political parties are sort of hopping over one another to do something and to look active on it. In fact, the Ontario Liberal Party and the Ontario Progressive Conservative Party both introduced legislation on the same day, both anti-bullying legislation. So certainly trying to look proactive on this issue, and we don't really know if actually any of these initiatives are going to work. It's often very difficult to evaluate the success of programs. We can certainly evaluate whether they're implemented, but actually measuring success is a whole other ball of wax altogether.
Have they been implemented?
Well, certainly in our paper that we released today, we looked at the overall strategy. So this is the strategy that the government has put forward to school boards and to develop policies and to develop to evaluate school climate and that sort of thing. And now they've, under the same policy, have released a new bill or proposed a new bill, Bill 13, which was proposed just in December. And so that hasn't been enacted yet. That's still in the legislative process, but it's certainly been a hot topic in the news.
Wow. You know, there are so many. There's a lot of tentacles to this. This isn't something that, because each school itself is kind of a unique community, isn't it?
It certainly is, and I think that's important to remember, as an issue like bullying is certainly it's a community issue, it's a relational issue, and so there is a little bit of freedom in the documents to allow school boards, obviously, to implement this and for individual schools to work on their own policies. But I think it's important to remember that we're talking a lot here also about not just policy, but about character and character education. And I think that really does start at home. And it's sort of interesting. I think parents often we have a very very accessible public education system, certainly compared to other places around the world. And so it's really easy for parents to kind of get in the rut that once you get the kid to the bus and get them on the bus, then your role stops. And that's actually not true. Parents are the primary educators. And in fact, our legal courts have confirmed that and say that parents delegate their parental authority to teachers during the day. And so we never stop being that primary educator. And so those discussions have to happen at home, I think, about bullying, about how we treat one another. The character issue and character development starts at home, and I think the school has a role in supporting that, but it really does start at home. And I think each community, obviously, as you say, is going to be unique, each school community, each community across Ontario.
When my kids were in high school, I cannot remember a time when dinner table conversation was more vibrant. I mean, we talked about everything because they were engaged. We talked about everything because we engaged them. Is that not the role of the parent?
I think that's a critical role. And if you look at the research, even just on family dinners, it's becoming, certainly families are finding it harder and harder to get around the table together. But it's amazing when you look at the research, the benefits that has just to share a meal together and to have those discussions. And so even if it's just once a week of saying, yeah, like Saturday night or Sunday night or whatever it's going to be, just getting the family together and staying in touch. And I think that's really key. A lot of it really does come down to relational issues with our kids.
One of the things you say in the executive summary is that educators need to ensure that students are not coerced into activism. Can you give me a little bit more on that?
Yeah. There are many great things about this strategy that's been rolled out, but there's also some concerning points. One of the things that the strategy relies quite heavily on is inviting outside groups and community groups to participate in school education and participate in the classroom. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because single-issue community groups bring passion, they bring expertise to education, but on the flip side, they also bring their own sort of narrow view of their particular issue into the classroom. And so we need to be ensuring that, one, that the material that they bring is, first of all, just age-appropriate for students. Second, that it really does allow for diverse interaction within students. And third, that it doesn't blur the line between education and activism during class time. And there has been some examples of possibility of that happening, where classroom activities start to look more like activism than education, and that students not having the opportunity to choose for themselves whether they participate into that is concerning.
Okay, so we know what parents should be doing. We know what educators should be doing. What should government be doing?
I think government certainly has an interesting role, obviously, and a vital role in this. First, I think they need to be able to ensure that they reasonably accommodate diversity of thought and opinion in the classroom, and be able to ensure that students are learning how to interact with one another in respectful ways, but also in really ways that that teach students how to work through diversity, how to work through differences of opinions. In the beginning of the strategy, right, in one of the sort of initial letters to the document, talks about the need for Ontarians to move beyond tolerance and move towards acceptance. And that language is never really identified in the document, but if tolerance is really just this idea of just really not caring, just being kind of uninformed, non-judgmental, just really not really caring, that, then it's not really a value, and we can move beyond that. But if tolerance really is that interaction of ideas and respecting somebody even though you disagree with them, I don't think we want to move beyond that. I think we want to foster that. And I'm not really sure what they mean by acceptance. And if it's really the government saying this is the point of view or this is the value, there certainly is always going to be a bottom line. There's always going to be things that are not acceptable in school. But if we're going to limit discussion and limit interaction, then that's really unhealthy. So I think the government needs to be really kind of proactive in ensuring that schools are still a safe place to talk about stuff. I think also I'd really like to see the government think about how they're going to measure the effectiveness of these strategies. It's, again, as I said, it's one thing to measure whether the strategy is implemented. It's another thing to measure whether it's actually having an effect. I'm not really sure how to do that, because equity and inclusiveness, that's a really hard concept to try to measure. But we need to do some, I think, some work on thinking through how we evaluate whether this strategy is really helping or whether it's even maybe perhaps hindering inclusivity and equity in the classroom.
How do you measure things like diversity of thought?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a big challenge, and I think we have to kind of create spaces that allow students to be able to share opinion. That's going to be a very difficult one to measure, and I think it will even come down to classrooms. And certainly, the document certainly speaks to teachers and their role in how they will monitor the classroom. In fact, it suggests that that teachers. I'll just read you here. It says that The classroom teacher is to assume responsibility for examining and taking steps to modify personal beliefs and biases that are inconsistent with equity and inclusive education principles. Now, that sounds great, but I think we need to be asking, how does a teacher measure a belief against the policy? How do they know whether it's inconsistent with a policy? And second, how do they... What sort of sanctioned steps are they to take to address a belief system? And third, what is the role of the parent in that teacher-directed action? Because certainly I think things need to be addressed, and there are things inappropriate in the classroom that need to be addressed. But again, that primary educator, the parent, needs to be involved in that.
Yeah, I think parents, educators, and government need to be involved at every step of the way. And part, I think where we get off course far too often, Peter, is when we're not, when we disengage and drop the kids off at the school at 8:15 and don't give a thought to anything they do until 3:15. That's when I think we have issues.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think parents need to take an active engagement. I think parents, are, again, as I say, often feel kind of lulled into just that kind of attitude. Life is so busy. Life is so hectic. You know, after school, we're rushing kids to sports and stuff. But we really do need to be engaged in our kids' education and being supporting their educational endeavor.
Well, I was very supportive, but I was lousy at helping them with homework. They're kind of on their own there. Peter, always good to chat. Thanks for this.
Well, thank you for having me on, Gary.
Take care. Bye-bye. Peter John Mitchell.